It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Today we finally acknowledge the obvious, that Jerusalem is Israel's capital. Consistent with the Jerusalem Embassy Act, I am also directing the State Department to begin preparation to move the American Embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. I intend to do everything in my power to help forge such an agreement. Without question, Jerusalem is one of the most sensitive issues in those talks. The United States would support a two-state solution if agreed to by both sides.
All right, that was President Trump making his very dramatic announcement yesterday over, you know, just simply doing what we said we would do back in the 90s, and that was establish our embassy in Israel's real capital, which is Jerusalem. Sandy Rios in the morning, happy to join you. By the way, AFA President Tim Weilman says the American Family Association commends President Trump for staying true to the issues most important to Christians and fulfilling his campaign promises. Dr. James Dobson issued a statement also. He says, throughout the years, I have had the great privilege of serving and advising political leaders at all levels of government, and that I have witnessed many promises made concerning Israel that were never fulfilled. With the decision to formally recognize Jerusalem as the capital of Israel, President Trump stands apart, once again demonstrating that he intends to keep his promises to the American people. So that's a pretty stunning development that happened just yesterday. Ambassador Nikki Haley had this to say.
Let's be clear. Let's do a reality check. Jerusalem is the capital of Israel. So we're acknowledging something that's common sense to everyone. The parliament's there, the prime minister's there, the Supreme Court's there. That is the capital. And by us putting the embassy there, that's a U.S. decision. Having said that, courage doesn't come by doing what everybody else says. Courage does by what you know is right. This is the right thing to do. And what the president's doing is he's showing leadership. And will there be those that have negative feelings about what we're doing? Yes, of course. But could this possibly lead to a peace process? Absolutely.
All right, that was Nikki Haley. And of course, you can imagine this is how the Middle East is responding, at least in part. I'll just give you an overview. Turkey has said that it will start fire with no end in sight. Furious Palestinians are burning American flags in protests. In Gaza, thousands flooded the streets to burn U.S. flags. Let me just read a little bit more of President Trump's speech. He says, I have determined that it is time to officially recognize Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. While previous presidents have made this a major campaign promise, they failed to deliver. Today, I'm delivering. So he said a lot more things that were very meaningful, which you'll want to see. If you didn't see his statement, you'll want to see that. Also, of course, the Muslim world is furious. There are all kinds of things happening, but this is what they always do. They always threaten and they scream and they yell and they burn things. And that's why people go, oh, they'll get upset. We can't do that, but we can do that. And so we are going to do it. It's going to take some time, but the embassy will be moved to Jerusalem. And, you know, interesting article in the Free Beacon by a writer who lived in Jerusalem. And he said one of the first arguments critics make against recognizing Jerusalem is that it would so anger the Palestinians that the peace process would never recover. But the Palestinians have rejected every offer of statehood. They're already unwilling to negotiate and were especially unwilling during the Obama years when the president was openly acting as their advocate. If they are so incensed that the United States is finally acknowledging the plain fact that Jerusalem is the capital of Israel, that they will never talk again, it tells us that the negotiated agreement was never possible in the first place. And that's kind of where I stand on it. And so that's what's happened. Now, the media is having a fit. So how about if you hear just a few things that the mainstream media is saying. Let's listen.
The other major news tonight, President Trump reversing nearly seven decades of U.S. policy, now recognizing Jerusalem as Israel's capital.
He had promised this day would come, but to hear these words from the White House was jaw-dropping. Not only signing a proclamation reversing nearly 70 years of U.S. policy, but starting plans to move the embassy to Jerusalem. No one else on earth has an embassy there.
The department is concerned about any possible violent reaction to President Trump's announcement today.
The president here is making a risky bet that doing something different will eventually end up productive for peace talks. But he's about the only one making that bet.
Seven decades of U.S. policy changed in an instant.
So you get it. You're going to hear a lot more of that today. You know you will. You heard it last night. And if you turn on any media outlet, you'll hear more of that today. They're apoplectic about it because they're pro-Palestine, and they have been for a long time. And many parts of the evangelical church have moved toward that, too. Not that we're against Palestinians, against Arabs intrinsically. It's just that Jerusalem existed before Islam ever, anybody ever dreamt it. 700 years, 700 AD is when Islam was founded. And so Jerusalem existed before that. It is the capital of the people of God, of Israel. And so can you imagine how encouraged the Israelis are? I have to tell you, you know, in my trips back there in the last few years, there's been such discouragement. They haven't had a friend in a long time. Can you imagine their joy at having an American president who unabashedly supports them, doesn't care what anybody thinks? I'm joyful about it. I'm tired of us operating like the bully. The guy that jumps up and down and screams and threatens to hurt somebody in the room gets his way all the time. And that's what I think the Islamists are. I think they're bullies. And I think the people in the Middle East who embrace Islam, who fancy that Jerusalem is their capital, only because they declared it so. It's like, you know, I used to had it described this way to me once. Whenever you see a church, you know, in the Holy Land, just a few, you know, 2 feet away will be a mosque. And someone said to me, it's kind of like in the early days of the burger chain wars, McDonald's did all the research and found out the very best location in every community to put in, you know, their stores. But following on the heels of that, Burger King would buy property near, they would use McDonald's research and buy property and build a Burger King across the street. By the way, just in full disclosure, I love Burger King. I think their hamburgers are much better than McDonald's. However, I digress. But the point is, copying, you know, that's what Islam has done in so much of the world. And, you know, they're upset. But Jerusalem is not theirs intrinsically. It is not. It belongs to the Jews. It just does. And so that's what happened yesterday. So I had to bring that to your attention. James Rosen has a good piece on the history of Israel and the United States. So let's listen to that before we leave this topic.
Smoke rises over Jerusalem.
Since Israel's founding, 12 successive presidents have struggled through a series of wars and peace processes to solve the Rubik's Cube that is the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, central to which has always been the fate of Jerusalem. The difficulty compounded after Israel, with its victory in the Six-Day War of 1967, unified the Holy City.
Every president for the last number of presidents, large number, they've come in and they were going to do it, and then all of a sudden they decide they don't want to get involved.
The Democratic Convention platforms of 1972 and 76 advocated for Jerusalem as Israel's capital, and as a congressman, Gerald Ford had done so. But neither Mr. Ford nor Jimmy Carter pushed the idea as president.
Do solemnly swear.
Bill Clinton did pledge to move the embassy, but when Congress overwhelmingly approved a measure in 1995 mandating it happen by May 31, 1999, the president allowed it to become law without his signature, citing pending peace initiatives.
As soon as I take office, I will begin the process of moving the United States ambassador to the city Israel as chosen as its capital.
That promise also went by the boards. Elliot Abrams, who worked the issue throughout the Bush-Cheney era, explained why.
I think President Bush and President Obama and President Clinton were persuaded by two things. Number one, a lot of pressure from the State Department. And secondly, by what I'd call threats of violence. If you do this, there'll be rioting, there'll be terrorism, and it will be your fault. The whole Arab world will go up in smoke if you do this.
Okay, so there you go. That's how it's been. And so nobody's done it because we don't dare cause trouble, you know. Thank you to the State Department, who have been filled with appeasers ever since I can imagine and remember. They've never really represented American interests, not in the modern times. They are more concerned about, you know, peace. They're like the Neville Chamberlains of the world, and they've done a lot of damage, I have to say. Not that we're against peace. It's just that peace comes, as Ronald Reagan says, through strength. Jerusalem is the capital of Israel. We're going to declare it so. We're going to move our embassy there and let the chips fall where they may. And so you'll be surprised, I think, at how the bullies will stand down once strong leadership opposes them. And Donald Trump has shown that. So we'll see. I want to just a few more things. Today, you know, in Congress, so much is happening. And we're going to spend a great deal of the show in a few minutes talking about what's happened with the tax plan, what's happening with the budget, because the government could potentially shut down on Saturday over the whole issue of the Dreamer Act. And there were impeachment proceedings, at least a vote that was attempted yesterday against Donald Trump. We'll talk about that. So we're going to talk about that mostly today, but I want to tell you a few more things before we begin that discussion. Quickly, something really, really wonderful happened yesterday. There was an award celebration at the Trump Hotel yesterday. Sean Hannity was the MC, and I was there along with Tim and Walker Wildman. They came too. And the people that received these impact awards are really true heroes. You know, you won't see them get awards, you know, not from the State Department, not from the Department of Defense, and not yet from the U.S. government. But these are heroes. And I want to just tell you that it was a wonderful celebration. Among those receiving awards were Dr. Larry Arnn, president of Hillsdale College, Dan Bongino, a former Secret Service agent, Tom Fitton, president of Judicial Watch, Frank Gaffney, president of Center for Security Policy, Charlie Kirk, who we'll talk to Charlie soon. He's 24 years old and the founder of Turning Point USA, which has a presence on like 150 college campuses. Great story. Rick Manning, who's on here often with Americans for a Limited Government. James O'Keefe, founder and president of Project Veritas. Chris Plant, who is a talk show host in Washington, who's one of my favorites, I have to say. Star Parker, good friend, Center for Urban Renewal. Leonard Leo, the executive vice president of the Federalist Society. And Richard Vigory. And so it was a great day. They had wonderful things to say. And I think many of us rock-ribbed conservatives were just so encouraged by what we heard, the optimism of how things are moving and of all the things that are being accomplished while the left is howling and screaming. And so it was a great day it was all very positive about what's happening in America and all the efforts to try to pull things back and the things that not only that Donald Trump are doing, but all these people that I mentioned are doing. You know, Judicial Watch alone has been the champion on revealing so much of the information we talk about every day here about FBI malfeasance, I'll call it that, about what's happening with the Justice Department by FOIA requests. They've done the work that Congress has been doing. So that's just one example of who the heroes are. I want to move to the Roy Moore race in Alabama before we take this break. You know that Mitt Romney now tweeted just yesterday that Judge Moore lacks honor and integrity. Now, that's what Mitt Romney tweeted. And so Steve Bannon hit him with a double punch. And this is basically what he said. Well, first of all, he said Judge Moore is a graduate of the United States Military Academy at West Point. He served his country in one of the toughest wars we ever had in Vietnam. That's honor and integrity. And while we're on the subject of Vietnam and honor and integrity, you avoided service, buddy. The college deferments, you went to France to be a missionary while guys were dying in rice paddies in Vietnam. Don't talk to me about honor and integrity. You ran for commander-in-chief. You have 5 sons, not one day of service in Afghanistan and Iraq. We have 7,000 dead and 52,000 casualties. Where were the Romneys during those wars? And so goes on. Ben Sasse is giving an ultimatum that he's not about to support the NRSC if they help Roy Moore because he feels like it's beneath him. Jeff Flake donated $100 to pro-9-month abortion Doug Jones, leftist Doug Jones, out of his protest on Roy Moore. Roy Moore's accusers have been discredited. That's why we speak so positively about him. Sandy Rios in the morning.
So What would you do with an extra $500 a month in your budget? $500. This isn't hypothetical, by the way. This is something you may need to think about very soon if you decide to become a member of MediShare. MediShare is a way to pay for your health care, and typically it costs $500 less per month for a family versus other health care plans. So seriously, think about this. You could pay off loans, pay down a mortgage, save the money for retirement, donate to charity. That would be a big deal. But you know what? Here's the best thing. MediShare works. It has 250,000 members, and it's growing fast. With MediShare, not only do you save, you don't have to pay for things you don't believe in either, and that is a beautiful thing too. So here's how you can find out more, and you might actually wind up saving even more than $500 a month. So check into it. Here's the number. Call 855-PSALM-23. That's 855-PSALM-23, now available in Montana. 855-PSALM-23.
How can you help keep your child safe at school?
Welcome to TIPS with public school educator Dr. Bill Ziegler.
As parents and as educators, we have a responsibility to act anytime that we believe our children may be in danger. If your child comes home and tells you that someone said something in the school about hurting the school or someone in the school, you need to act quickly and promptly. First thing, call the school principal. Talk to the school. Secondly, you may want to contact the local police authorities just to keep them updated and in the loop. Thirdly, don't hesitate. Don't think, oh, this will go away, because guess what? It may not. Your child's safety and the safety of every child in your school may depend on you sharing the knowledge that you have. So if your child tells you that they know about a threat to the school, stand up, talk. It's everyone's responsibility to keep our schools safe.
Visit the TIPS website at 4tips.org.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
My name is Caitlin Bird. I'm a nursing major and I'm a junior. The School of Nursing here at TMU, it's different than any other, you know, university or college out there. Every time we come into class, no matter which nursing professor it is, we always begin in devotion and prayer, and we become a family. They actually allow the students to get up and do devotion and prayer. We pray with each other and for each other, and that's just what sets us apart from any other school of nursing out there.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
A raging firestorm threatens much of Southern California at this hour. Major interstates are shut down, homes are burning, and thousands have been ordered to evacuate. Some of the most iconic places in the region are in danger, from Bel Air to the famed Getty Museum. One survivor said it was like driving through hell. But in the midst of the destruction, there are stories of hope. A reporter and her cameraman saved horses from a fast-burning blaze. And in another location, firefighters came face-to-face with the owners of a burning mansion. They told the homeowner they only had time to save one item. The man asked the firefighters to save the Christmas tree, filled with family ornaments, filled with memories. And just before the home came crashing down, the firefighter saved that tree. A reminder of what is truly important during this Christmas season: family. I'm Todd Starnes.
Merry Christmas from American Family Radio and Sandy Rios in the Morning.
Say that this is something that I do with a heavy heart and with a profound sense of duty to country. The president has committed obstruction of justice. The president fired the FBI director who was investigating the president about his connections to the Russians in the 2016 election. This is not about the president and firing someone else. It's about him firing the FBI director. And it's not about the FBI director investigating someone other than the president. He was investigating the president. And the president has gone on to say that he considered the investigation when he fired the FBI director. He went on to say that he, in a tweet, thought that this was a made-up story. And he went on to give what I call intimidating commentary about the comments with reference to the firing. So this is not something I take lightly. This is something that I believe the American people have to weigh in on.
That was Democratic Congressman Al Green from Texas, and he brought about a vote. He tried to get a vote on impeachment yesterday in the House. The resolution was killed, 364 voting to table it, 58 Democrats voting to move ahead. But and that may seem like, oh, this is silly, and what difference does it make? But really, this is exactly what they plan. What Al Green just said there is exactly what they plan. That's why they are, the Democrats are trying desperately to take back the House in 2018, because that's exactly going to be the first thing on their list. And trust me, it will turn out differently the next time if they win. Nancy Pelosi said, now is not the time. It's okay to do it, just now is not the time. Well, lots is happening in the House and also in the Senate. Needless to say, Tommy Binion joins us today. He's the director of Congressional and Executive Branch Relations for Heritage Foundation. And always, you know, Tommy's one of my go-to persons on what's going on the Hill. And I've asked him to join us this morning. Good morning, Tommy.
Good morning, Sandy. Thanks so much for having me.
My pleasure. You know, the thing about you, Tommy, is you're so cheerful. You deliver the worst news in the most cheerful way. So that's... you got to help me to learn how to do that. I don't think I do it as well as you do. Nevertheless... just a word about that impeachment vote. Anything that I left out that's important?
No, I'm not exactly sure what the high crime or misdemeanor Congressman Green is pointing towards. The clip you played there is about his firing of James Comey. That's not a crime. That's a authority, a power that the president actually has. Congressman Green, I think, is... completely missing the point of impeachment in the Constitution. And I think it's really important to point out the Constitution has impeachment for a reason. High crimes and misdemeanors is the threshold that the Constitution lists as a reason for the president to be impeached. And all that Congressman Green has pointed to is an exercise of his powers, the president's absolute powers to fire the FBI director. So I think it's important that, as conservatives, we're always looking back to the Constitution and thinking about what it means. You know, the Democrats want impeachment to be this political thing, and they don't want a strict interpretation of the Constitution so that they can manipulate it to mean whatever they want it to mean. But we know it means what it says, and I think it's important to point that out.
Yes, I think so. God, but I think it is also important to underscore that that's exactly what's going to happen if Democrats take back the House in 2018. And so people just have to be fully aware that that is the first thing on the agenda. You know, also yesterday, Tommy, while you and I were at an awards ceremony that I just talked about before you joined me in D.C., the Freedom Caucus was having a conference. Now, I'm throwing things at you. You might, you know, we're going to talk about the budget, and so forgive me for throwing you some curves here, but the Freedom Caucus had a press conference outside of Capitol Hill talking about the FBI accountability. They said things like this. Matt Gaetz, I want to mention names because these guys deserve, I think, credit certainly for what they've said. Congressman Matt Gaetz, this is one of his statements. We've got to find out what's going on to be done to clean up the deep state that's discrediting the rule of law in this country, giving special treatment to liberal Democrats like Hillary Clinton. Mark Meadows, Matt Gaetz, by the way, FBI Director Christopher Wray is going to be testifying before one of the committees in the House this morning. Jody Heiss of Georgia stood up and said it's clear that Hillary Clinton received break after break from the FBI. Everyone ought to be treated equally under the law, regardless of who they are. Representative Perry of Pennsylvania said the corruption that leads to Clinton being let off to continue, we may wind up in a police state. Is this now a Justice Department that prosecutes individuals? Folks, this is how police states are started. This is how it begins, and it has to stop. And I could go on and on with the statements that they made. Christopher Wray is going to be testifying this morning. Tommy, what do you know about that and what the plans are for interrogating him?
I don't know what the plan is for interrogating him. I can tell you that the congressman that you just mentioned are talking about the rule of law. They're making an appeal to the rule of law, which is absolutely what we're clamoring for here on the outside, begging our representatives in the government to take the rule of law seriously. This was an important part of the 2016 campaign. This was an important part of President Trump's charge against candidate, Hillary Clinton, whether it's Uranium One or anything down the list of things that Hillary Clinton should be investigated for. Of course, we've got Robert Mueller out there. He spent $3.5 million so far on an investigation of President Trump. That's, you know, it's for nothing. It's for Russia collusion, but it's for whatever he wants. And he's just investigating all Republicans at this point, everybody in President Trump's administration. And, of course, we don't have the same on the other side of the aisle. I think we're all frustrated with that. So, and I think this testimony today, this hearing in the Oversight Committee, it's a glimmer of hope that that Republicans, conservatives, are going to get to the bottom of this. But I don't want to make a mistake. This is not a major feature of the Republicans' agenda on Capitol Hill. This is not something that Speaker Ryan or Mitch McConnell are invested heavily in. This is not something that, you know, I think it's great that they're doing it, but I'd like to see more attention go into this. I think this is the reason Hillary Clinton is not the president, and I think that's a very good thing, but I think it also shows that Americans, we want justice. We want the rule of law to be pursued. We don't want an elite class of people who's above the law.
Tommy, you know, this is something that is still dangling. You know, the Ron DeSantis and others are threatening to bring contempt of Congress citations to FBI Director Wray and also to Rod Rosenstein, who's leading these investigations out of the Justice Department. And they did not respond by midnight, which was their deadline, meaning the FBI and the Justice Department, on Monday. So I had heard that Paul Ryan had signaled that he was willing to sign off on these. It is contempt of crumb. Is it contempt of Congress specifically? Is that the language of what they want to bring against these two entities?
That is one of the powers that they have, is to hold somebody in contempt if they don't respond to. You know, Congress has a subpoena power, and they can subpoena things, and if you don't respond to them, you can be held in contempt, and you can be put in the jail. There's a jail in the Capitol. They don't use that jail anymore, but you're right. It is. That's the right language, contempt of Congress.
Okay, so, but I've heard that Paul Ryan had, in fact, I think he had a press conference a couple of days ago signaling he would support this, but I think the real question is, do you really think he would support holding Christopher Wray, the FBI director, and James and Rod Rosenstein of the Justice Department in contempt of Congress?
Well, if he said so, I surely hope he keeps his word. You know, that aside, my expectation would be that his preference is to focus on something else. I want to be focused on this, but it always seems that Republican leaders are focused, and this week they're focused on tax reform, and that's a good thing. We want a tax reform, but they always seem to shy away from these political scandals in a way that frustrates you and I. But hopefully, if he said he would, he keeps his word.
Yeah, well, let's hope so. All right, so moving to your area, really, of expertise, is this whole business of what's going on with the budget and taxes. I do say that where is the tax bill? It's supposed to have gone to conference, and they're trying to pass it quickly, but, you know, I've been out of the loop a little bit since we were traveling or busy yesterday, so... Where is the tax bill? Is the House and Senate debating this right now?
Yeah, so you've got it right. They're in conference. The House passed a version of the bill. The Senate passed a different version, and now the two bodies are in conference with one another. So that means they're gonna draft a new bill, a third bill, a compromise between the two, and hope that that compromise will then go back to both chambers and pass, and then land on the president's desk. They're trying to do that before Christmas. You know, that's two and a half weeks now of time to get that done. They're not that far apart. I think they will be able to get that done. There's still some work, you know, some real compromising to do and some work to be done, but I think everybody's optimistic it will get done.
You know, interesting.
There's a lot more going on this month that's complicating things.
Yeah, I thought they had set on the tax bill that they were trying to pass it within the next 2 days. Maybe they thought that the House would just embrace the Senate version, and that didn't happen, huh?
Yeah, well, one thing that we heard early on was that they were afraid that maybe Roy Moore would lose in Alabama, and they would want to have the tax bill done before that. Looks like he's going to win, And the election is on Tuesday, and you know, he'll be seated in pretty much immediately in the next few days after that, by tradition. And so, you know, that was an artificial deadline, I think, that they,
okay.
they put on the time frame that was causing them to say they wanted it this week. But I think it'll take maybe next week as well.
Okay, that makes sense, because it didn't. All right, so now let's talk about the budget. There was a short-term budget signed last spring. I think you and I discussed it. I think you explained in great detail what a boondoggle it was for the Democrats in terms of money and cash. And President Trump signed it. He was early into his presidency, and it gave the Democrats just everything they wanted. It's been in effect. Now it runs out tomorrow night at midnight. So what's going on? They need a new budget, Tommy. What are they doing?
Well, they're passing a two-week budget. It's another kick the can down the road. If we back up a little bit, your listeners will remember the famous Oval Office meeting with President Trump and Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer, where they had the famous Chuck and Nancy deal. That was just in early September, and that was a two-month CR, continuing resolution. It's just a rubber stamp on current government funding. No increases or decreases to any accounts. Everything just stays the same. So here we are. That bill is going to expire tomorrow. And Republicans and Democrats haven't come together on a long-term deal. Now, here's what's stopping them, and I think this is the part that's most frustrating. President Trump ran on rebuilding the American military. We want maximum resources to go to our military, everything that they need to keep us in a position as a global superpower. So that means an increase in defense spending. That's what President Trump proposed in his budget, and that's what House and Senate Republicans have proposed in their budget. And in response, the Democrats have said, okay, we'll give you your money to increase funding at the Pentagon to protect our national security and protect our interests around the globe, but only if you give us the same amount of money to spend on whatever domestic programs we want. It's a ransom. They're holding the U.S. military ransom. And so that's the impasse right now. They can't agree on how much money to spend because the Democrats won't agree to an increase in defense spending until the Republicans agree to an increase of the same size on domestic spending. Now, they're going to buy themselves two more weeks. They're going to pass a two-week CR. But the frustrating thing about that is it expires on Friday, December 22nd. And I think everybody listening to this knows how important it is to get home to your family for Christmas. And that's a powerful motivator on the floor of the House and on the floor of the Senate. And so it's really just a political trick. They think it'll be easier for them to pass something right before Christmas. The members desperately want to get home to their families. And the result of that will be a much worse bill. Probably we're looking at giving the Democrats what they want, an increase in domestic spending to go along with the increase in defense spending. And overall, that looks like over 2 years, an increase of $200 billion, which, you know, if you would have said a year ago today, when it was clear that Republicans were going to have the majority in the House and Senate and the White House, that, you know, the net effect of their first year on spending would be an increase of $200 billion in spending, I think I would have banged my head against the wall. It's so frustrating.
Tommy, let me interrupt you just a second. Can you stay with me just a little bit longer?
I can, sure.
Okay, because I want you to be able to finish your thought on that, just a few more back and forths on that, but also this whole DACA thing. Because in a letter went out signed by 34 congresspersons. We're going to take the break here, Rob, and then we'll come back on the other side. There was a letter to Paul Ryan signed by 34 congresspersons, you know, expressing their, talking about they want DACA to pass. And I want us to talk about that, so stay with me. Tommy Binion is my guest. He's the director of Congressional Executive Branch Relations for the Heritage Foundation. And we'll be right back. This is Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk. We'll be right back.
I have set my bow in the cloud, and it shall be a sign of the covenant between me and the earth. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Corner. Ken Ham has now installed permanent rainbow-colored lights at the Ark Encounter in Kentucky, so all can see that it is God's rainbow, and he declares its meaning in Genesis 6. The rainbow is a reminder that God will never again judge the earth with a global flood. Next time, it will be judged by fire. The ark is lit permanently at night with a rainbow to remind the world God owns it. And it is what he says it is. It's high time for Christians to take the rainbow back.
Visit the Hamilton Corner on the podcast page at AFR.net for more from Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
To sharpen the faith of Christians and to share the good news of Jesus Christ with those who don't know him. That is the mission of the Christian Worldview Radio program. This is host David Wheaton inviting you to join us this Saturday morning at 9 Eastern, 8 Central, to pursue that mission as we discuss a compelling topic from a decidedly biblical perspective. The Christian Worldview, Saturday mornings at 9 Eastern, 8 Central, right here on AFR Talk.
With all the trees and toys, the sales and spending, our society is forgetting that Christmas is about Christ. So far, over 200,000 Keep Christ in Christmas wristbands have been distributed. But let's do more. Call now at 877-927-4917 or visit afastore.net and order a 10-pack or more of Keep Christ in Christmas wristbands. It's a fun and easy way of sharing this important reminder. And let's keep Christ in Christmas with the American Family Association.
Are you concerned about the future? The AFA Foundation can help. End-of-year giving allows you to offset your current taxable income, providing you with valuable tax savings on this year's return. And your generous gift will help further the mission of AFA to inform, equip, and motivate people in the culture war for years to come. Through the AFA Foundation, you're supporting the work of the American Family Association by helping individuals and families leave a legacy to help stem the tide of secularism and rebuild our Christian foundations. As the end of the year approaches, carefully considering what to give and when to give it can increase the impact of your gift while still meeting your own needs as well. For example, with a cash donation, your itemized tax return may allow you to receive up to the full value of your charitable gift. Contact the AFA Foundation through Facebook at our website, afafoundation.net, or call 800-326-4543, extension 345.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Hooray for Donald Trump. Unlike every one of his predecessors since 1995, he actually did what he promised to do with respect to moving the U.S. Embassy in Israel from Tel Aviv to the Jewish state's actual capital, Jerusalem. That's the good news. The bad news is that his directive envisions a government business-as-usual pace to get this done, which is extremely ill-advised. Taking years to set up a new U.S. embassy on the hotly contested real estate of Jerusalem invites subterfuges by our State Department and/or violence on the part of the Palestinians and perhaps other Sharia supremacists. So, the president must simply direct that the existing U.S. consulate in Jerusalem become the interim embassy immediately. By effecting this transformation overnight, he could steal a march on his adversaries at home and abroad and minimize incentives for their sabotage. This is Frank Gaffney.
Merry Christmas from American Family Radio and Sandy Rios in the Morning. Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Sandy Rios back with you. Well, Frank put a different spin on the Jerusalem announcement by the president, which we didn't even get into, but we will, no doubt, shortly. A lot of complexity right now, and it's difficult to make it simple. Tommy Binion is helping us kind of make it simple. He's very good at that, telling us what's going on in Congress. And before we go back to discussing that with Tommy, let me just say that these Keep Christ in Christmas wristbands are just a wonderful way of doing exactly that, of reminding people what Christmas is all about. I was watching Fox this morning and noticing that they were, you know, they're not using, I wanted them to use Christmas songs. I, you know, not that there's anything sacred about using Christmas songs, but it is Christmas. And who else is going to, who else in the mainstream media is going to remind us of the real reason? But you and I have that same responsibility as we remind ourselves, as we buy gifts, we make plans, we write our cards out, that this is the birth of a Savior. And what good news is that? That the world has a Savior. We are not stuck in this chaos. We are not people without hope. We have a Savior. The world, not just for the United States, the world has a Savior. And he was born. Of course, we celebrate this time of year. We don't know when he was born, but we celebrate it at this time of year. So if you'd like one of these wristbands, you can call 877-927-4917. That's 877-927-4917. Or visit afastore.net, afastore.net. You have to do that, by the way, by December the 12th. That's next Tuesday, or you won't get them by Christmas. So I hope that you will make that phone call. All right, Tommy Binion of Heritage Foundation is with us. Tommy, the government shutdown could happen on Saturday, but that's not likely if they go for this short term, is it?
It's not likely, no. But no, you know, you never want to sit here and say it's impossible, because it is possible. To be 100% clear, Democrats and Republicans have to work together to get even the short term. Republicans can't pass it on their own. They can pass it on their own in the House. I'm not positive they have the votes to do that even in the House. But in the Senate, they need Democrats to go along with it. And so the Democrats could withhold their vote. I'm not anticipating that. But I don't think that they've said, you know, 100% yes, we'll vote for that. It's in their interest, too. You know, they want the $200 billion spending deal that I was talking about before the break. They want that. And they think that, you know, this two-week short-term thing will help them get that. With the impending deadline of getting home for Christmas, they abuse that. That's as clear as it can be, and it's every year.
Yeah.
Fiscal year ends at the end of September, and for whatever reason, they always do a CR that expires in December, and it's always right before Christmas, and they abuse that deadline to manipulate people, members of Congress, and their families into voting for things. I don't like it.
Yeah, you said for whatever reason. We both know, Tommy, it's because they want more money for their pet things. It's kind of a nice game that the Democrats and the Republican leadership plays, which puts people like the members of the Freedom Caucus in a terrible bind, because they're the ones that are trying to, you know, hold back spending and keep some sanity in all of this. Where do they stand on a short-term CR?
Well, they don't like it. The point of the short-term CR is to set up a situation where the big deal, the omnibus with the increase in spending, is more likely to happen. So the Freedom Caucus opposes it. Are they gonna vote no and put themselves in the middle of this and try to with the specter of a government shutdown in the background? That's another question. And I don't speak for them, so, you know, I won't answer it for them. But they do oppose it. This is an irresponsible move that they're not hoping to get the big spending deal that the leadership is hoping to get. But I'm not sure that they're strategically willing to be, putting themselves in a position to be party to a government shutdown. I'm just not sure.
Okay, Tommy, let me just retract and make sure that I understand this correctly. Tomorrow night at midnight, the government will shut down if they don't come to some sort of an agreement. This short-term CR, continuing resolution, this short-term budget for 2 weeks up until the drop-dead time of December 22nd, would it be the same spending levels, or would they revisit everything in this short-term CR?
Yeah, it'd be the same spending levels.
Okay, same thing as what they passed last spring that was so horrible, they'll continue it for two more weeks.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
All right, so, and then, of course, the advantage to the Republican leadership and to the Democrats is what you have described, which is what they do every year. They want to throw everything in, terrible stuff, and because the congressmen are in a crunch to go home to see their families, terrible stuff gets passed. Everybody probably remembers that's how Obamacare was passed.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what we're facing. All right, so then we have this other wrinkle. I mentioned it before the break, and that's a letter that I'm sure you've seen that I hold in my hands. It's a letter to Paul Ryan from 34 members of the Republican caucus saying that DACA should be passed. It says, studies have shown that passing legislation to permanently protect these individuals would add hundreds of billions to our country's gross domestic product. That's why the business community, universities, and civic leaders alike support a permanent legislative solution. And it goes on and on and says it needs to happen before the holidays to make these no longer children, nearly a million, get legal status. And it's signed by people like Scott Taylor. I can't read all of these, but I want to highlight a few of them. Mia Love, Charlie Dent, Peter King, Elena Rosalitnin, Fred Upton, Jeff Denham, Chris Stewart, and there were a few others I wanted to read. Joe Barton, who was stepping down because of the gross photos he sent one of his lovers, Adam Kinziger from Illinois, and then a whole bunch of other people. So they are demanding that DACA, they're asking Ryan, who wants to do this anyway, put this in that big spending bill on the 24th. What do you think is going to happen?
I don't know. I think Republicans are willing to do DACA. Unfortunately, they're willing to make the 690,000 people who got legal status under President Obama's illegal, unconstitutional order, they're willing to make their status permanent. There is a disagreement, though, amongst the parties. The Democrats don't want just that. They want a much larger group of people to get legal status. They want a much larger group of people to get amnesty. So not just DACA. What that group of people is really asking for is what the Democrats want. They're sort of being disingenuous by saying, we just want DACA. And also, there is no reason to do it before Christmas. There is no reason to attach it to the spending bill. President Trump has said that the program will go on through March of next year. Christmas is they just made up a deadline. And obviously, you know, they're playing on people's emotions, but it's misleading to say that it needs to get done before the holidays. I don't think it needs to get done at all. I think it's amnesty. I think it's a miscarriage of justice. I think that the president who enacted it, President Obama, did so unconstitutionally. But a couple things about that letter that I think are important to highlight. Those 34 Republicans, that's the usual suspects, by the way. Those are the people that do this stuff, that support the leftist agenda and try to push it through a Republican majority. That's enough people to join with the Democrats to have a majority in the House. But that majority does not support just DACA. They want 11 million people to get amnesty. There was a protest on Capitol Hill yesterday, and the refrain, the chant, was, all of us or none of us, which means all of us are getting amnesty. Well, we don't want just the 700,000 DACA recipients to get amnesty. And that's a very clear ideology of the left. The DACA recipients are just being used as a scapegoat. They're being used as a political leverage point. The Democrats aren't actually asking on behalf of those individuals. So it's a frustrating political game. It very well could get attached to the spending bill. This is the kind of thing that happens when you set up this terrible process that we've been talking about. The American people don't support it. That much is clear from last year's presidential election. And President Trump was one of the first people to see that. And so it's frustrating that we're here now.
Okay, so potentially, there's a lot of scenarios, but potentially what could happen is on December 22nd when they have their next deadline, artificial deadline, right before Christmas. If Democrats are pushing for this amnesty for everyone, for all, as you said, and enough Republicans are pushing for it too, Paul Ryan is going to be faced with either government shutdown. Of course, we know how he feels about this, or putting this in, adding this to the budget. Now, President Trump, in theory, supports DACA. But my understanding is he has asked for a standalone DACA proposition, not one folded into the spending bill. Do you think he would sign a bill legalizing illegal immigrants at this point in time?
I have no idea, and it's an impossible choice that Republican leaders would be forcing him into. Putting a bill on his desk 3 days before Christmas with something that is an anathema to what he ran on. It's directly opposite what he ran on. Put amnesty on his desk if you are a Republican speaker and he won as a Republican the White House running against amnesty 3 days before Christmas with a government shutdown in the back. That is political malpractice on behalf of Speaker Ryan. It would be unthinkable that he would do that, but he might.
Yeah.
So I think it's also important to know that the president, I think he would support just DACA without chain migration, without this expansion to all these other millions of people. But I don't think that that's what they're going to give him. And so he's going to be faced with another impossible choice. And that's the problem with the December 22nd deadline. That's why the Freedom Caucus is fighting against it, because it sets up this situation where, you know, President Trump is in the breach, and nobody else is, and nobody's willing to have his back.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why I'll just say Republican leadership must be changed. They must actually, I would like to see them replaced. And I want to mention one person. I want to point out Scott Taylor of Virginia, who has been disingenuous on his stand on this. And Numbers USA is having quite a battle with him because he has in the past made statements kind of indicating he was not going to go along with this. But this is the first signature on this letter. And now Congressman Taylor is threatening Numbers USA. I can't even use the words that he used. He's threatening to destroy Numbers USA. So Numbers USA is making public the 34 members who signed this letter. By the way, we'll post this letter on our Facebook page so you can see if your congressman signed this letter. Tommy's described very well what kind of position this puts the president in and where this is all going to lead. So, Tommy, any one wonderful other thing about Congress we need to know today?
Well, the debt ceiling also expires tomorrow, so they don't need to act right away. They can basically backfill and take out more bonds to add to the debt, but it expires tomorrow too. We're north of $20 trillion in debt. There's a debt crisis coming, and Republicans aren't taking it seriously. I think we need to be watching that. We need to be talking about it. The CR and other things are going to get our attention, but the debt ceiling expires tomorrow. This December is going to be full of it's a roller coaster in Congress. Tax reform good, CR, $200 billion spending deal bad. How's that?
Yeah. Okay. Well, that sums it up. Tommy Binion, Heritage Foundation. Tommy, thanks as always. Thank you. Thanks for your diligence and your ability to sort of break it down so people can understand it. Thank you. Like, you're the watchman on the wall for us in Congress. So thanks for joining us, Tommy.
You bet. Thank you, Sandy.
Okay, my pleasure. All right, I want to tell you that tomorrow I'm going to be interviewing a fascinating lady who's Austrian. And she has an incredible story about what's happening with Islam in Austria, in Vienna. Its effect on the Christmas markets and the celebration of Christmas and the effect on homes, the increase in rapes. It's an incredible story. So I hope that you'll tune in tomorrow to hear this story. Meanwhile, always, this is Christmas, so prayerfully, let's celebrate this Christmas. Grateful for things we can be grateful for and asking God's intercession on those things where we need Him, both in the public life and also in our personal life. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.